guys, it's Em. How are you? I wanted to tell you that I am so honored to be here today and to tell you about my feat over the last 10 years. It's been crazy, but I am honored today because I have someone that was very, very important in my puzzle piece. And if I didn't have this connection with her, I'm not sure that I would be living today. I would like to introduce you to Jenny, and she was my sweet therapist that when I was in the dark, I could not communicate. I could not do anything. She was a sweet therapist that came to me. And I would like to introduce you to Jenny. And Jenny, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited and I'm just honored to be part of this and to be part of your journey, Emily. It was just incredible to be part of and to watch your successes and to continue to do that. So thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. And like I said, you're one of the biggest pieces of my puzzle. And what, when you came to the ICU, did they tell you anything about me?
Yeah, so it was actually a weekend, and so I was, I think, the only therapist working that day. There may have been one other. I think I was the only one.
With our connection that we had, had you gone sending you to me?
Say that again, Emily, sorry.
I said with our connection that we made, I definitely know that it was God that sent you to me.
I agree. I fully believe that. I happened to be the lucky one that he chose to send that day. And I remember very clearly the doctor, the hospitalist, called me and he basically said, I know it's the weekend. I know you're probably really busy, but I have a young patient in the ICU and I think she might be locked in. So if you don't know what locked in means, which maybe Emily is going to share a little more about this, but means that you're completely understanding everything, but you have no way to communicate. And typically you don't have a lot of movement either. So you can't like gesture or communicate with writing or whatnot. And he told me a little bit more saying she's on the ventilator right now. I think she might be understanding, but I'm not sure. I think she might be in there, but I don't know for sure. And we really need to make some decisions. And he said, so I would really appreciate it if you would be able to help us determine if she's really in there. And then we can work with her and her family better to make those decisions. Meaning, what is the next step? Can't stay on the ventilator forever. Do we do a tracheostomy? Do we talk about really hard decisions? So that was what I knew going into it.
I could remember that I hated that ventilator in my mouth. Oh my gosh, Jenny.
I can imagine you did. I can't imagine.
Oh gosh, it was so hard. When I got it out and had the tracheotomy, I remember my face just dying, my jaw, you know, but the biggest part I remember was in ICU, and I locked eyes with you at that moment, and I just was like, she knows I'm in here. Like, I can't make the world understand how that felt, because it's like, no one else could understand but you.
And I remember that feeling on my end of locking eyes and thinking, she's in there. Like the first thing that I saw was, even though you had no movement except for your eyes, you were immediately making eye contact with me, tracking my movement. And so that was my first sign. And then I tried some more structured things to test out your comprehension, and, you know, having you look up or down for yes or no, or identifying pictures and words, and you were immediately accurate on every single one. So then I'm like, okay, she's definitely in there. There's no doubt. I mean, I thought so just by even the fact that, like you said, when you locked eyes with me, and then finally, I think I just said to you, Emily, you're understanding everything, aren't you? And your eyes got, I'm like tearing up talking about it.
I know, I am too.
Even 10 years later, 10 years, is that what it's been?
Yeah, it's been 10 in June.
That's crazy. And yeah, I remember asking you that, and your eyes got so big, and it was like you wanted to just jump.
I was so scared in the dark by myself, and it was like, oh my gosh, you know, I need to prove that I'm here, you know, and hear you say that, it was amazing. It was like, I had tears, but I couldn't even cry.
Exactly. And you did prove it, girl. You did. You were accurate on every single thing I tried. And I was able to then, you know, tell the doctor, like, yes, she's definitely in there. And talking with your family, I just remember that being just such an emotional, overwhelming time. I think your family, you know, I can't speak for them, but it'd be interesting to talk to them now, like what they remember about those moments and, you know, going into that that time frame. But yeah, I just remember the whole thing being like,
I do remember, you know, my brother asking me, Emily, look at Dad, Emily, look at Mom, look at me, and I knew instantly who they were, and it was just, I couldn't talk, so I felt like, oh my gosh, she's got this, and she is going to get me out of here, and just to see you, it warmed my heart every time, because...
I'm so glad. I look back and think it was just a small, you know, part, but it was truly an incredible thing to watch where things went from there, and I just loved being part of it and working with you.
I know. Shelby and I tried to keep it a secret. but when the swallow test came in, I was like, okay, do I talk to her? And, you know, she told me not to talk. And the swallow test came in, and I remember you were setting it all up, and you were prepared to, like, turn around and come to me. But then when you turned around, I remember saying, hi, Jenny. And, like, it was, like, I could finally talk to, like, the biggest part of my story.
Yeah, you guys definitely kept it a secret. I don't know how, both of you, knowing both of you, how you did that. But when Emily transferred to the acute rehab unit, a different therapist named Shelby took over, and I was sort of hesitant to give you up because, hello, I loved working with you, and we had
clicked.
Had clicked really well. And but yeah, your memory is just like mine. I was like, I went in and said good morning and was setting up the fees machine. And I turn, just like you said, I turn around and suddenly I hear from you saying good morning. And I think I just about fell on the floor.
I was going to say, I think you almost passed out. You're like, did she talk to me?
And my initial reaction was just like complete surprise and joy, and there aren't even words. I was just so thrilled to hear your voice, and so thrilled for you that you could use your voice again. And then I think I looked at Shelby and was like, what? You didn't tell me. And she just started laughing. I was like, that was worth it. That was so worth it.
Oh, yeah. We tried really hard to keep it a secret. I was like, I don't want to tell Jenny. I want to talk to her.
Well, I was glad you did afterwards, but I just couldn't. That was perfect. I just couldn't even believe it when I had turned around and then you're talking. And then you kept going, like saying full sentences. I was like, okay, she went from nothing to let's have a conversation all at once.
I know. It was amazing. And my mandadoodle that I had for communication, the only thing I could communicate with you, it was just amazing that my mom would have thought of that, being a kindergarten teacher.
Right.
And yes. I remember giving you my mandadoodle because I wanted you to remember me and, you know how special you were in my journey.
Well, I still have it in my office, and I remember that day when you came in, and every once in a while you would come visit, which I loved, and you said, I have something for you, and I was like, you do, and you pulled that out, and you said, it took me a while, but I'm ready to pass it on, and I want somebody else to benefit from it, and I thought that was just so, it was so you, but so meaningful, and obviously process for you, because that was such a comfort thing for you when you needed it. And you know, when you first started out, you couldn't even use the mandadoodle. You couldn't even move your fingers, and then you got some finger movement, and then you got some hand movement, and you were able to write on the mandadoodle. And that was such a great idea that your mom had.
I know. I remember you guiding my hand, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
When I first started.
Right. Yep. So I still have that, and it means a lot. And you know, hopefully I don't have too many more people that need it, but you know, that it will be put to good use for sure.
I know. I was definitely a rare case.
That's for sure. And I just remember thinking, we're not that different in age.
No, we're not.
And we share a love of the Red Sox. And I remember going in and seeing your pictures, and it was summertime, right? That you had your stroke.
Yeah.
And I remember like knowing that you had just been at a Red Sox game a few weeks before.
Actually, it was the day before. It was Father's Day.
It was the day before. Okay.
Yeah. And it was the day before, and we sat on the Green Monster and watched the Red Sox. We thought the other team was going to win, but it was exciting because they won. And I was so excited to finally, you know, enjoy something my father and my brother loved also.
And little did you know that the next day your life would completely change.
Right. I remember thinking at the game and the way home, like, oh, this was such an incredible day. And then little did I know, I would have the worst day of my life.
Yeah. I just remember thinking that going in to see you and thinking, this could be me, you know? I mean, it always could be us. You never know. Life throws a lot of things at us, and we can never know what's coming. But I think that hit me too, just that, you know, we were so close in age, and it was something that I could have been doing with my dad, you know, the day before, whatnot. And you just never know.
You are so incredible, Jenny. I want to make sure that, you know, you know how special you are and how compassionate you are and how much passion, you know, that you show. And it means a lot.
Well, thank you, Emily. I really appreciate that. I certainly love what I do, and I'm so privileged to be part of, you know, like I say, a small part of people's recovery, and get to be, you know, it's a very vulnerable time for people, and it's a scary time, and there's so many unknowns, not just in the ICU, but as you progress and get used to adapting to new ways of doing things. And I am humbled all the time by my patients, and I learn so much from them, probably more than they take from me, and that's okay. You know, I think it's just, I appreciate that, Emily, but I think people like you make it all worth it and are exactly the reason why I do what I do. So you're just as much a part of my journey as a speech pathologist, and certainly one of the highlights of my career. I don't say that lightly. It's been just incredible to see your experience and to see you now reaching out to help others that are going through similar things.
I am definitely very honored, and I definitely can say that as bad as my stroke was, I found passion for the brain and connection with other people to realize what they're going through at the same time.
Definitely. And that's huge when you can relate to somebody who's been through something similar. That's just so huge.
Well, I definitely, if I could give you a great big hug, then, you know, I would. if you could tell our audience two things that they could do either at home or at the hospital after they have a brain injury.
Yeah, sure. So one thing that I would say is don't be afraid to try new things. I think that probably sounds cliche, but it applies to so many things, both therapy, but also just in life. I think, you know, you might surprise yourself. You know, we talked about the tongue blades, and we use those.
I don't even know if they know what those are, Jen.
Right. Yeah. So we had stacked. So Emily had significant issues with her jaw mobility, and she was tightening up. Actually, it got worse after she had improved a little bit overall, and she was off the vent, and she was on rehab and whatnot. And we didn't want her jaw to lose the mobility that it had, and we wanted to increase the mobility. So basically, in short form, we use stacks of tongue depressors put together and stretch, use that to put in the opening and then stretch to open and close her jaw, and use that as part of exercises to in her therapy. So, but I think, you know, when we presented that and tried it, she looked at us like, you have got to be kidding. And we were like, yep. And you know what? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but we're going to try it. And, you know, sometimes we have to be creative, and some things that we try will work and some won't. But I think it's, don't be afraid to try new things. And then also in life, like, you are clearly adapting to new challenges, maybe physically, maybe emotionally, mentally. It could be any type of change, really, from what you're used to. But there is life after stroke. There's life after head injury. And I know that's easy for me to say on this side of things, but I've witnessed it over and over. I've witnessed it in Emily. I've witnessed it in countless other patients that I've been able to work with, people in my community that are able to learn new skills, get into new hobbies. I've seen people do adaptive martial arts. I've seen people go rock climbing. It doesn't have to be extreme. It can be using tongue depressors to open your jaw. It can be a different way of holding a pen, you know, but I think that is one thing that I thought of, is just to not be afraid to try. And just because it doesn't work once doesn't mean it won't a different time. You know, set yourself up for success. If you know you're completely wiped out because you've tried to do 100 things today, maybe that's not the time to try something new. Maybe do it when you are well rested, or if you know that you are always functioning your best after you you know, rest for 20 minutes or whatever it might be. I mean, everybody's different, but set yourself up for success and try those things when you think you're at your best. You know yourself and your energy level and what kinds of things affect you and how, and just, yeah, pay attention to your body and your mind and take a chance, you know, try something different.
Right. That is so true. And as you get stronger, I hope that people understand, well, as the survivor, to aim small, because you don't want to aim too big, because then you see that you can't do it. And maybe, like you said, you won't go back into it, but you know when you are stronger.
I agree, Emily. That's a really good point. I think sometimes we think, like, you know, even people who haven't had a stroke, well, I'm going to run a marathon. Well, you're not going to run 26 miles the first day. You're going to train and build up to it. And after a stroke or a head injury or whatnot, you do need to do it incrementally and have the small success that leads up to your ability to try even more. I think that's a really great point, Emily.
It's very important. And you need to know, audience, survivors, you are not alone. There's so many people that you find connections with. You know, if you feel like you're isolated at all, then reach out. You know, it took me 8.5 years to really reach out to other survivors. And that was my mistake, because I wanted to keep myself isolated. Every doctor told me, you know, they don't have answers. So I really, really want you to know that I appreciate you coming on the show today. We love having you, Jen. And I want to leave you with a quote for the audience. A goal should scare you a little and excite you a lot.